Chapter 110. Tom Pinch, going astray, finds that he is not the only person in that predicament. He retaliates upon the fallen foe. Tom's evil genius did not lead him into the dens of any of those preparers of cannibalic pastry, who are represented in many standard country legends as doing a lively retail business in the metropolis. Nor did it mark him out as the prey of ring droppers, pea and thimble riggers, duffers, touters, or any of those bloodless sharpers, who are, perhaps, a little better known to the police. He fell into conversation with no gentleman who took him into a public house, where there happened to be another gentleman who swore he had more money than any gentleman, and very soon proved he had more money than one gentleman, by taking his away from him. Neither did he fall into any other of the numerous man traps which are set up without notice, in the public grounds of this city. But he lost his way. He very soon did that, and in trying to find it again he lost it more and more. Now, Tom, in his guileless distrust of London, thought himself very knowing in coming to the determination that he would not ask to be directed to Furnival's Inn, if he could help it, unless, indeed, he should happen to find himself near the Mint, or the Bank of England, in which case he would step in, and ask a civil question or two, confiding in the perfect respectability of the concern. So on he went, looking up all the streets he came near, and going up half of them, and thus, by dint of not being true to Goswell Street, and filing off into Aldermanbury, and bewildering himself in Barbican, and being constant to the wrong point of the compass in London Wall, and then getting himself crosswise into Thames Street, by an instinct that would have been marvelous, if he had had the least desire or reason to go there, he found himself, at last, hard by the Monument. The man in the Monument was quite as mysterious a being to Tom as the man in the moon. It immediately occurred to him that the lonely creature who held himself aloof from all mankind in that pillar like some old hermit was the very man of whom to ask his way. Cold, he might be. Little sympathy he had, perhaps, with human passion. The column seemed too tall for that. But if truth didn't live in the base of the Monument, notwithstanding Pope's couplet about the outside of it, where in London, thought Tom, was she likely to be found? Coming close below the pillar, it was a great encouragement to Tom to find that the man in the Monument had simple tastes. That stony and artificial as his residence was, he still preserved some rustic recollections. That he liked plants, hung up bird cages, was not wholly cut off from fresh ground cell, and kept young trees in tubs. The man in the Monument, himself, was sitting outside the door, his own door. The Monument door. What a grand idea! And was actually yawning, as if there were no Monument to stop his mouth, and give him a perpetual interest in his own existence. Tom was advancing towards this remarkable creature, to inquire the way to Furnival's Inn, when two people came to see the Monument. They were a gentleman and a lady, and the gentleman said, "How much apiece?" ". The man in the Monument replied, "A tanner." ". It seemed a low expression, compared with the Monument. The gentleman put a shilling into his hand, and the man in the Monument opened a dark little door. When the gentleman and lady had passed out of view, he shut it again, and came slowly back to his chair. He sat down and laughed. "They don't know what a many steps there is. ". He said. "It's worth twice the money to stop here. Oh, my eye." The man in the Monument was a cynic, a worldly man. Tom couldn't ask his way of him. He was prepared to put no confidence in anything he said. "My gracious!" ". Cried a well-known voice behind Mr. Pinch. "Why, to be sure it is." ". At the same time he was poked in the back by a parasol. Turning round to inquire into this salute, he beheld the eldest daughter of his late patron. "Miss Pecksniff." ". Said Tom. "Why, my goodness, Mr. Pinch, Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Jerry. What are you doing here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have rather wandered from my way, apostrophe, said Tom. I apostrophe, I hope you have run away, apostrophe, said Jerry. It would be quite spirited and proper if you had, when my papa so far forgets himself. Apostrophe, I have left him, apostrophe, returned Tom. But it was perfectly understood on both sides. It was not done clandestinely. Apostrophe, is he married? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Jerry, with a spasmodic shake of her chin. No, not yet, apostrophe, said Tom, coloring. To tell you the truth, I don't think he is likely to be, if Miss Graham is the object of his passion. Apostrophe, pshaw, Mr. Pinch. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Charity, with sharp impatience. You're very easily deceived. You don't know the arts of which such a creature is capable. Oh, it's a wicked world. Apostrophe, you are not married? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Tom hinted, to divert the conversation. And no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jerry, tracing out one particular paving stone in Monument Yard with the end of her parasol. But really it's quite impossible to explain. Won't you walk in? Apostrophe, you live here, then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tom, yes, apostrophe, returned Miss Pecksniff, pointing with her parasol to Todgers. I reside with this lady, at present. Apostrophe, the great stress on the two last words suggested to Tom that he was expected to say something in reference to them. So he said, only at present. Are you going home again soon? Apostrophe, no, Mr. Pinch, apostrophe, returned Charity. No, thank you. No. A mother-in-law who is younger than I mean to say, who is as nearly as possible about the same age as oneself, would not quite suit my spirit. Not quite. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jerry, with a spiteful shiver. I thought from your saying at present apostrophe, Tom observed. Really, upon my word. I had no idea you would press me so very closely on the subject, Mr. Pinch, apostrophe, said Charity, blushing, or I should not have been so foolish as to allude to oh really. Won't you walk in? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Tom mentioned, to excuse himself, that he had an appointment in Furnival's Inn, and that coming from Islington he had taken a few wrong turnings, and arrived at the monument instead. Miss Pecksniff simpered very much when he asked her if she knew the way to Furnival's Inn, and at length found courage to reply. A gentleman who is a friend of mine, or at least who is not exactly a friend, so much as a sort of acquaintance, so upon my word, I hardly know what I say, Mr. Pinch. You mustn't suppose there is any engagement between us, or at least if there is, that it is at all a settled thing as yet is going to Furnival's Inn immediately, I believe upon a little business, and I am sure he would be very glad to accompany you, so as to prevent your going wrong again. You had better walk in. You will very likely find my sister Mary here, apostrophe she said with a curious toss of her head, and anything but an agreeable smile. Then, I think, I'll endeavor to find my way alone, apostrophe said Tom, for I fear she would not be very glad to see me. That unfortunate occurrence, in relation to which you and I had some amicable words together, in private, is not likely to have impressed her with any friendly feeling towards me. Though it really was not my fault. Apostrophe, she has never heard of that, you may depend, apostrophe said Jerry, gathering up the corners of her mouth, and nodding at Tom. I am far from sure that she would bear you any mighty ill will for it, if she had. Apostrophe, you don't say so? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Tom, who was really concerned by this insinuation. I say nothing, apostrophe said Charity. If I had not already known what shocking things treachery and deceit are in themselves, Mr. Pinch, I might perhaps have learned it from the success they meet with, from the success they meet with. Apostrophe, here she smiled as before. But I don't say anything. On the contrary, I should scorn it. You had better walk in. ... There was something hidden here, which piqued Tom's interest, and troubled his tender heart. When, in a moment's irresolution, he looked at Charity, he could not but observe a struggle in her face between a sense of triumph and a sense of shame, nor could he but remark how, meeting even his eyes, which she cared so little for, she turned away her own, for all the splenetic defiance in her manner. An uneasy thought entered Tom's head, a shadowy misgiving that the altered relations between himself and Pecksniff were somehow to involve an altered knowledge on his part of other people, and were to give him an insight into much of which he had had no previous suspicion. And yet he put no definite construction upon Charity's proceedings. He certainly had no idea that as he had been the audience and spectator of her mortification, she grasped with eager delight at any opportunity of reproaching her sister with his presence in her far deeper misery, for he knew nothing of it, and only pictured that sister as the same giddy, careless, trivial creature she always had been, with the same slight estimation of himself which she had never been at the least pains to conceal. In short, he had merely a confused impression that Miss Pecksniff was not quite sisterly or kind, and being curious to set it right, accompanied her as she desired. The house door being opened, she went in before Tom, requesting him to follow her, and led the way to the parlor door. "Oh, Mary! ... she said, looking in, "I am so glad you have not gone home. Who do you think I have met in the street, and brought to see you? Mr. Pinch. There. Now you are surprised, I am sure." ... Not more surprised than Tom was when he looked upon her. Not so much. Not half so much. "Mr. Pinch has left Papa, my dear," said Cherry, "and his prospects are quite flourishing. I have promised that Augustus, who is going that way, shall escort him to the place he wants. Augustus, my child, where are you?" ... With these words Miss Pecksniff screamed her way out of the parlor, calling on Augustus Model to appear, and left Tom Pinch alone with her sister. If she had always been his kindest friend, if she had treated him through all his servitude with such consideration as was never yet received by struggling man, if she had lightened every moment of those many years, and had ever spared, and never wounded him, his honest heart could not have swelled before her with a deeper pity, or a purer freedom from all base remembrance than it did then. "My gracious me! You are really the last person in the world I should have thought of seeing, I am sure." ... Tom was sorry to hear her speaking in her old manner. He had not expected that. Yet he did not feel it a contradiction that he should be sorry to see her so unlike her old self, and sorry at the same time to hear her speaking in her old manner. The two things seemed quite natural. "I wonder you find any gratification in coming to see me. I can't think what put it in your head. I never had much in seeing you. There was no love lost between us, Mr. Pinch, at any time, I think." ... Her bonnet lay beside her on the sofa, and she was very busy with the ribbons as she spoke. Much too busy to be conscious of the work her fingers did. "We never quarreled," said Tom. Tom was right in that, for one person can no more quarrel without an adversary than one person can play a chess or fight a duel. "I hope you would be glad to shake hands with an old friend. Don't let us rake up bygones," said Tom. "If I ever offended you, forgive me." ... She looked at him for a moment, dropped her bonnet from her hands, spread them before her altered face, and burst into tears. "Oh, Mr. Pinch." ... She said, "although I never used you well, I did believe your nature was forgiving. I did not think you could be cruel." ... She spoke as little like her old self now, for certain, as Tom could possibly have wished. But she seemed to be appealing to him reproachfully, and he did not understand her. "I seldom showed it, never, I know that. But I had that belief in you, that if I had been asked to name the person in the world least likely to retort upon me, I would have named you, confidently. Apostrophe would have named me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Tom repeated. Yes, apostrophe, she said with energy, and I have often thought so. Apostrophe, after a moment's reflection, Tom sat himself upon a chair beside her. Do you believe, apostrophe said Tom, oh, can you think that what I said just now, I said with any but the true and plain intention which my words professed? I mean it, in the spirit and the letter. If I ever offended you, forgive me, I may have done so many times. You never injured or offended me. How, then, could I possibly retort, if even I were stern and bad enough to wish to do it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, after a little while she thanked him, through her tears and sobs, and told him she had never been at once so sorry and so comforted, since she left home. Still she wept bitterly, and it was the greater pain to Tom to see her weeping, from her standing in especial need, just then, of sympathy and tenderness. Come, come. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tom, you used to be as cheerful as the day was long. Apostrophe, ah, used. Apostrophe, she cried, in such a tone as rent Tom's heart. And will be again, apostrophe, said Tom. No, never more. No, never, never more. If you should talk with old Mr. Chuzzlewit at any time, apostrophe, she added, looking hurriedly into his face, I sometimes thought he liked you, but suppressed it. Will you promise me to tell him that you saw me here, and that I said I bore in mind the time we talked together in the churchyard? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Tom promised that he would. Many times since then, when I have wished I had been carried there before that day, I have recalled his words. I wish that he should know how true they were, although the least acknowledgement to that. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.